todo el mundo. Clases por edades hasta los 10 años o por niveles hasta los 17 años. Llámanos sin compromiso al 91-133-5832 o entra en nuestra página web grupobaugan.com.
Apúntate a los cursos intensivos de inglés de Vaughan. Descubre la eficacia de un método que te reta y te sorprende y con el que sí es posible mejorar tu inglés en poco tiempo. Eso sí, tendrás que esforzarte. Llama al 91-133-5833 o entra en grupobaughan.com. ¿Do you Vaughan?
¿Vas a dejar pasar el verano otra vez sin hacer nada con tu inglés? Vente a Vaughan. Con nuestros Summer Impacts refrescarás tu inglés con los mejores profesores. Este verano, hazte un Summer Impacts, un curso intensivo con clases concentradísimas y muy, muy refrescantes. Summer Impacts. Más información en el 91-133-5833 o en grupobaughan.com.
Con Let's Cook te va a quedar un inglés rico, rico. Ya tienes Let's Cook en cualquiera de nuestras tiendas Vaughan o en vaughantienda.com. Consíguelo antes de que se enfríe.
The Sound of English.
How's your listening today? Is it okay? I'll be putting you to the test with some more Twitter Responde. And, of course, we'll be having some app questions and the word of the day today, striking, and the idiom to have an inkling. All coming up.
¿Estás pensando en apuntar a tus hijos a clases de inglés después del verano? En Club Junior aprenderán inglés con el método Vaughan, muy dinámico y divertido. Recibirán una formación de calidad y con profesores de todo el mundo. Clases por edades hasta los 10 años o por niveles hasta los 17 años. Llámanos sin compromiso al 91-133-5832 o entra en nuestra página web grupobaughan.com.
Hello there, welcome to another edition of The Sound of English. It's Thursday, my name's David Riddell, and I'll be with you for the next hour, putting you to the test with lots of listening challenges and app questions. So first of all, the first app question is a fill-in-the-gap question. So it is, are you it? Okay, that is the gap I want you to fill in, the and the Spanish translation will be, ¿te cuesta encontrarlo? And the options I want you to choose from are A, having cost finding. So if we put that in the gap, it would be, are you having cost finding? B would be having difficulty to find. So that is, are you having difficulty to find it? So todo esto son traducciones de ¿te cuesta encontrarlo? Then C, option C, is, are you having problems to find it? And option D is, are you having trouble finding it. Okay, so those are the options. So it's fill in the gap to create our equivalent of te cuesta encontrarlo. Are you having cost finding it? Are you having difficulty to find it? Are you having problems to find it? Are you having trouble finding it? Okay, I'll give you the answer to that a bit later on. At the moment, I can tell you, some people are really very quick off the mark. For example, I can tell you that 14 people have already had a go, and of that, those 14, 78.57% of them have got it right. So, as I always say, you do the math. Or in English from the British Isles, you do the maths with S on the end. So there we go. That's our first app question launched. Fill in the gap. ¿Te cuesta encontrarlo? Are you it? So the four options I've just told you. Let's see if it's changing. Yeah, it's about the same still. Looking a little bit redder, in fact, if anything. It's now 64.52% of you are getting it right. So looking a little redder, but we'll see. Okay, now, without any further ado, we're now going to turn our attention to our regular section, Twitter Responde.
Y ahora, el reto en Twitter, a través de @imdavidguadel. Twitter Responde.
When you back? That was Twitter Responde, the listening challenge of the podcast edition. When you back? And I have a very long list of people. Loads of people got it right, I'm happy to say. When you back? So there are how many words there? There are actually four words. When you back? Sounds like one, but there are four. What are those four words? Well, the first word is the question word, when. Then we have the verb to be, are. Then we have the pronoun you, and then we have the adjective back. So basically we have this expression to be back, which is really como volver, I suppose. So when are you back? Sounds like when you back. When you back. When you back. When are you back? So listen very, very carefully to those the first three words, because those are the common ones. When you, when you, when you, when you back, when you back, when you back. When you back, you could almost say that R and U are almost totally eaten, really, aren't they? When you back, when you back, when you back. So, what's the translation? Cuando vuelves, or cuando regresas. Cuando vuelves, cuando regresas. When are you back? So, like the Spanish, we're just using the present tense, really, aren't we? When are you back? You can also say, when will you be back? As well, that's all right if you want to use the future with will. When are you going to be back? Going to? But it's very, very common to use, as you do in Spanish, the present. When are you back? Of course, you're referring to the future, but we're using the present. When are you back? So to be back, volver. ¿Cuándo vuelves? Who was the first to get it right? The podcast edition at the end of yesterday's show. It was, and I can say that he was very, very, very quick off the mark. It was Mr. Houses, when are you back? Followed very, very hot on the heels was, I can say, Javi. Javi was the next one. So Mr. Houses was first, Javi was second. And then Melena was next on the list. Then Express, when are you back? Jack was next, when are you back? Cuando vuelves, thank you for the translation. Then Maggie, when are you back? And Virginia Palatin, when are you back? Then Maria Angeles. Joaquin Lathera was close. He said, will you be back? Which would be, I suppose, vuelves or regresas? Vuelves? When will you be back? It was actually, when are you back? But very, very good guess. And then we had Fran Javier. When are you back? Casfil. When are you back? Juan Ramon. When are you back? Cuando vuelves. It looks like I have Belen next. When are you back? Cuando regresas. Then Rodrigo Fuentes was almost right. It was just the word order. He didn't actually use the interrogative word order. He said, when you are back, which is not a question. really. So when are you? When are you back? Is the correct answer, but very, very close. Then we had Peter. When are you back? Cuando vuelves. And then Lata. And last but not least, when are you back? Cuando vuelves, Beatriz. So there we go. A long list of people. Well done to all of you. All of you who had a go at the Twitter Responde podcast listening challenge. Okay, so are you ready for the live one? This is the one I'm going to give you now and give you the answer to at the end of the show. Well, near the end of the show. Are you ready for it? Okay, let's count down, shall we, from the number 5. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Shouldn't you be at work? There we go. That's the first hearing. Did you get it? If you did, if you know what I'm saying, then just tweet me on I'm David Rudell. That is arroba imdavidwaddell. And of course, if you have a go, if you tweet me, I will read your name out, of course. And if you get it wrong, it doesn't matter. The most important thing is taking part, is participating, is having a go. Yeah. So if you get it wrong, that doesn't matter. Or if, of course, if you just want to send in a tweet saying, can you please repeat that? Then that's absolutely fine as well, because that's what you should always do. If you're having a conversation with someone and you don't understand a sentence they say, don't feel bad about saying, I'm sorry, can you repeat that? It's not a problem. We don't mind. So I'll just give you another hearing straight away. This is today's Twitter Responde live listening challenge. It is, should you be at work? Now, there's a little false start there, so I'll give you a third hearing. This is a free one for you. It is, should you be at work? There we go. Okay, so that is our Twitter Responde live listening challenge launched. Right, I've just tweeted an article. In fact, it was the article we looked at yesterday about these Russians who have built a 3-car fidget spinner. So, if you have that in front of you, we can just look through it right at this moment. A group of Russian motor enthusiasts. Now, that word has one of those difficult double S sounds. One enthusiast, two enthusiasts, or a group of enthusiasts. So they are very enthusiastic about cars and motors and things like that. So a group of Russian motor enthusiasts have tried to make a car-based version of the fidget spinner and very nearly succeeded. Not nearly, but very nearly succeeded in their attempts to make it spin. So spin, of course, hirad, yeah? In a stunt. Now, this is another word which would be pronounced badly if you're not careful, because the U, of course, in English is normally pronounced stunt, not stunt, not stunt. So, in a stunt. Now, what is a good translation of the noun stunt? Can you think of one? That's right. Well, if you can think of one, why don't you just tweet it to me, yeah? A good translation for the noun stunt. S-T-U-N-T. Okay, and I will read out some of your answers. So, in a stunt, what is a stunt? A stunt that would not look out of place on BBC's Top Gear programme. I think they actually show that programme on a channel here in Spain, Top Gear. It's a very, very, very popular programme on the BBC about cars and vehicles in general. So, in a stunt that would not look out of place on BBC's Top Gear magazine, the Novosibirsk, goodness me, based Garage 54 team welded together. So this is a verb I think we looked at a few months ago, to weld. It's to weld something together, the front ends of 3 Lada Samara cars, to see if they would replicate the action of this year's cult toy, Russia's Sputnik News website reports. But instead of getting the 3-headed monster to spin on the spot, All they could manage was a series of ever-increasing circles as the motors worked against themselves. So, one of the team said, "You saw it yourself. It looks like a real spinner. We didn't get the crazy spinning as the cars started to break down." There we go. An interesting phrasal verb. Break down. One of the team said, "But still we managed to drive three cars at once." So previous experiments by Garage 54 Group, the Garage 54 Group, who have nearly 700,000 subscribers on YouTube, following their escapades, include a cat dog where they welded two cars together. The spinner, they said, was the logical conclusion to this by adding a third. But the car was short-lived. It didn't live for very long. The Garage 54 video on YouTube, now viewed over 600,000 times, shows the Russian spinner being torn apart with the help of a tow rope attached to an SUV. Okay, very good. Now let's have a look at how the listening challenge is doing. Okay, I can tell you that the first person to have a go today was Express. And then the next person hot on Express's heels was Sorina Stoyan. And then Beatriz, and then Javi, and then Jack, Mr. Houses, Fran Javier, Milena, Maria Angeles, Paula Feno, Juan Antonio, Juan Ramon, and also Anna Sobrino, Kikokus, Belen, and Eder Intriago as well has had a go. Fantastic. Good stuff. Okay, I think we'll take a short break now. And after the break, I'll give you the answer to the first app question. Remember, it's a fill-in-the-gap. So I want you to translate the question, ¿Te cuesta encontrarlo? So is it A, are you having cost finding it? B, are you having difficulty to find it? C, are you having problems to find it? Or D, are you having trouble finding it? And of course, I will give you another hearing of today's Twitter Responde live listening challenge. Do you want to hear one now, just before the break? Okay, we'll go to the break with another hearing of today's Twitter Responde live listening challenge. It is, should you be at work?
Ay, otra vez me ha suspendido el inglés. Este niño, ay, ya no sé lo que hacer. Dice que el inglés del colegio es un rollo, que se aburre y que no le gusta, por lo importante que es el inglés.
¿Sabes lo que le pasa a tu hijo? Que le gusta el inglés, pero todavía no lo sabe.
Este verano van a descubrirlo. Apúntalos a nuestro curso intensivo para niños y jóvenes entre 4 y 17 años, donde pasarán 4 horas al día durante toda una semana haciendo ejercicios divertidísimos. Descúbreles su pasión por el inglés. Infórmate en el 911335832 o en grupobaugan.com.
Apúntate a los cursos intensivos de inglés de Vaughan. Descubre la eficacia de un método que te reta y te sorprende y con el que sí es posible mejorar tu inglés en poco tiempo. Eso sí, tendrás que esforzarte. Entra en grupobaugan.com. Do you Vaughan?
I'm so excited to share this news with you. I've got a new book. It's called English on the Go. Aprende inglés viajando por el mundo. And it's a book where I'll take you on a trip to 30 different cities and we'll discover fascinating things and improve our English along the way.
Aprende inglés viajando por el mundo. El nuevo libro de Alberto Alonso.
All aboard! English on the Go.
Aprende inglés viajando por el mundo. El nuevo libro de Alberto Alonso. Ya a la venta en vaugantienda.com, en delegaciones o en nuestra tienda en grupobaugan.com.
¡Qué calor! ¡Y qué aburrimiento! Llevo todo el día tirado en el sofá. Se me está cayendo la casa encima.
¿Vas a dejar pasar el verano otra vez sin hacer nada con tu inglés? Vente a Vaughan. Con nuestros Summer Impacts refrescarás tu inglés con los mejores profesores. Este verano, hazte un Summer Impacts, un curso intensivo con clases concentradísimas y muy, muy refrescantes. Summer Impacts. Más información en grupobaughan.com.
Okay, welcome back to The Sound of English. It's time to give you the answer to the first app question, the fill in the gap one. How do you translate the question, really? ¿Te cuesta encontrarlo? In English. So is it, are you having cost finding it? Or B, are you having difficulty to find it? C, are you having problems to find it? Or D, are you having trouble finding it? And of course, the correct answer was D, are you having trouble finding it? So after having trouble, we have the gerund, not the infinitive. Are you having trouble doing something? Are you having trouble finding it? Are you having trouble understanding what I'm saying? Are you having trouble? ¿Te cuesta encontrarlo? ¿Te cuesta entenderme? ¿Te cuesta? Are you having trouble? Are you having difficulty as well? Are you having problems? But it needs to be followed by the gerund. Are you having problems finding it? Are you having difficulties finding it? Are you having difficulties understanding me? Yeah. So the only one that was correct, the only correct option was D. And I can tell you that 70% of you, well, 70.89, so nearly 71% of you got it right. Brilliant stuff. It's time to launch the second one. This time it's a vocabulary-based question. Which of the following options will you not find in a theatre? So the options I'm giving you are, of course, an English theatre here. A, the dress circle. B, the stalls. C, the patio. Or D, the gods. I think this should be quite easy, actually, but we'll see. So which of the following options will you not find in a theatre? In an English-speaking country, of course. The dress circle, the stalls, the patio, or the gods? Which one is it? I will give you the answer to that a bit later on in the show. By the way, a good translation of stunt. There are quite a few. Proeza, hazaña. If you're talking about a film stunt, you could just say una escena peligrosa, una toma peligrosa. If you're talking about a stunt in an aeroplane or something, vuelo acrobático, ejército acrobático. To pull a stunt would be hacer algo peligroso. Y tonto, I would say, to pull a stunt. And, of course, we use the word stunt with publicity as well. A publicity stunt. Un truco publicitario. It's just a stunt to get your money. Solo un truco para sacarte dinero. So there we go. Stunt. I guess in the context of the article, it would be something like hazaña, I would say. Maybe proeza, hazaña, that sort of thing. So stunt. Now, the word of the day I gave you yesterday was striking. Striking as an adjective, really. Although, of course, it could be the gerund of the verb to strike. Striking. What can it mean? It can mean remarkable. It can mean arresting. If you're talking about pictures or clothes. Or if you're talking about a colour, it could be llamativo as well, I suppose, couldn't it? A striking colour. If you're talking about contrast, it could be notable. Similarity, difference, sorprendente. But the one I was thinking of, relating to the book we were talking about the other day, Inglés para Ligar, was in reference to beauty. It's striking, imponente, impresionante, imponente. Her striking good looks. So imponente or impresionante belleza. We can also use the expression to bear a striking resemblance to someone. A striking resemblance. Okay, to spell strike, striking. To bear a striking resemblance to someone is parecerse muchísimo a alguien. The most striking feature would be el detalle que más llama la atención de algo. And what else can we say? It is striking that, blah, 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 blah. It's impresionante que, blah, 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 blah. And of course, if we're talking about a strike, then we're talking about huelga, which is very, very pertinent this week when we're talking about the striking workers on the metro this week. They are on strike, but you can say they are striking, the striking workers. But of course, it's much, much more common to say the workers are on strike. Yeah. So it's done in huelga. So who was the first person to write in with the word of the day? I can tell you that it was, according to my list here, Juan Ramon. He said striking, llamativo, striking, attracting attention by reason of being unusual, extreme, or prominent. And he gave another translation, sorprendente, very good. Then next on the list was Express. Express wrote in saying striking, arresting the attention and producing a vivid impression on the sight or the mind. Fantastic. That's a very good definition from Express there. Next on the list was Belen. Belen said striking, impresionante, llamativo, y this wonderful word that I had problems saying yesterday, despampanante. Got it this time, despampanante. Good stuff. Then Mr. Houses, striking, despampanante, putting me to the test here, sorprendente or impresionante. Then we have Peter, striking, notable, llamativo, despampanante, for the third time, I can do it. And also latter, striking, adjective, first noticeable, striking resemblance, or I suppose the next one will be impressive or inspiring. So striking landscape, notable, impresionante. So thank you very much to the people who wrote in. I think I might have missed some people off the list. If I did, I do apologize. I really do. I was I got together this list a little bit too quickly, I think, this morning. But there we go. So that is the word of the day, striking. Now, the word we're going to look at tomorrow is heap. Okay, so what am I saying? What is that word? Do you know the translation? Do you know the spelling? Do you know what it means? If you do, then write to me on I'm David Waddell, and we'll look at that word tomorrow. It has a number of meanings. Okay, so let's look at the listening challenge before we go on to the idiom of the day. Yes, I can see that a few people have had another go. Edita OJ has added her name to the list. Melena has had another go, it looks like. Otherwise, the list is still with Eder, Intriago, Express, Belen, Kikoku, Sorina, Ana Sobrino, Juan Ramon, Juan Antonio, Feno, Paula, Maria Angeles as well, again, Melena, Fran Javier, Mr. Houses, Jack Ash, Javi Lopez, Beatriz, Sorina, and yeah, Express was the first person to actually have a go at today's listening challenge. Do you want to have another go? Another listen? Okay, here we go. It is... Shouldn't you be at work? There we go. What am I saying? I will reveal the answer to that a little bit later. Okay, so the idiom of the day was to have an inkling. Now, this is an idiom we looked at a few months ago, quite a long time ago. To have an inkling. What does it mean? Well, if you remember, it actually comes from a Middle English word meaning whisper or mention. And there's also a verb meaning to hint at. But if we go back a bit further to Old English, there was a noun, apparently. The noun was inca, and that means suspicion. So the early meaning of inkling was a faint, perceptible sound, overtone, or rumour, but now refers to a tiny piece of information or knowledge that a person receives about something. Who is on my list? You'll find out in 2 minutes.
En Radio Madrid, 100.4 FM.
Tú, sí, tú. ¿Llevas toda la vida estudiando inglés y tu nivel sigue sin convencerte? ¿Te sabes toda la teoría pero te falta la práctica? Tenemos la solución para ti.
Vaughan Town. De las cantidades diarias recomendadas, un Vaughan Town contiene un 0% de teoría, un 100% de práctica, un 100% de diversión y un 0% de corte al hablar inglés. Vaughan Town hace maravillas por tu inglés.
Vaughan Town es un programa único y eficaz para aprender inglés sin clases, mediante conversación, práctica y más práctica. 6 días completos hablando únicamente en inglés con nativos de todo el mundo, con un montón de actividades súper entretenidas en un lugar de ensueño. Suena bien, ¿verdad? Ven a Vaughan Town. Más información en el 91 133 5833.
¿Necesitas hablar inglés en tu trabajo? En Vaughan Systems contamos con los mejores profesionales y el mejor método para que tus empleados puedan hablar inglés. Y con el aval de más de 37 años de experiencia en el sector, incrementa el potencial de tu compañía con los cursos de inglés para empresas de Vaughan Systems. Llámanos al 91-133-5833 o visítanos en grupovaughan.com.
Me encanta esa canción que tiene estribillo.
Ah, ya sé cuál es.
'Cause if you liked it, then you should have put a ring on it. If you liked it, then you should have put a ring on it. Don't be mad once you see that he wanted it. If you liked it, then you should have put a ring on it.
Wow, your English is amazing. Where are you from?
Me? I'm from Vaughan.
Ven a Vaughan Town. El lugar donde vivirás una experiencia única que equivale a 500 horas de clase y mejorarás tu nivel de inglés. Atrévete a vivir en inglés y verás la diferencia. Infórmate en el 91-133-5833.
Do you, Vaughan?
Aprende, diviértete. Esto, lo que escuchas, es Vaughan Radio.
Right, welcome back to The Sound of English. My name's Dave Brudel, and I'm about to give you the answer to the second app question. That's right, which of the following options will you not find in a theatre in an English-speaking country, of course? A, the dress circle, B, the stalls, C, the patio, or D, the gods. And I can just have a look out of curiosity. Okay, not bad. 67.46 of you have got it right. Quite a few people have had a go. What is the right answer? I can tell you it is the patio. We don't have patios in theatres in English-speaking countries. The patio is, in fact, called the stalls or the orchestra as well. The dress circle, strangely enough, is el palco. The stalls, as I said, el patio, or we sometimes say in the States, the orchestra. Patio doesn't exist, so that's the correct answer. Which of the following places do you not normally find in the theatre? The patio. And then the really strange one is D, the gods. The gods is how we call, apparently in Spanish you call it, el gallinero or el paraíso. The gods, we call it, los dioses. The part right at the top of the theatre, normally the cheapest part. But yeah, the part that's nearest the gods, basically. So that is definitely a place you would normally find in the theatre. But the patio doesn't exist in an English speaking country anyway, because I know, in Spanish theatre, el patio is patio de butacas is very, very common, but not in English speaking theatres. Okay, so there we go. That's the second app question. The third one, I'm going to go back to our wonderful book, Inglés para Ligar, for this one. And it is a question. ¿Cómo se dice? I think you'll get this one right. ¿Cómo se dice poner los cuernos a alguien en inglés? So the options I'm giving you are A, to cheat on someone. B, to deceive on someone. C, to play on someone, or D, to fool on someone. Which one means poner los cuernos a alguien? So to cheat on someone, to deceive on someone, to play on someone, or to fool on someone. I can see now that seven people have already had a go, and all of them have got it right. I hope it's not because of past experiences, but you never know. So that's pretty good. It's completely 100% right, 100% green today, so that's good. Now, let's have a look at... Oh, dear. It's just swished, and now I can see there's a tiny little bit of red. In fact, 4.76% of you have got it wrong. Never mind. I'm sure it's just one person. Right, so the listening challenge that we have at the moment is... I'll give you another hearing just very, very quickly. Shouldn't you be at work? There we go. So I'll give you the answer to that in a minute. Now, going back to the idiom of the day, to have an inkling. An inkling. Now, of course, ink, I-N-K, is what? That's right, tinta, I think you say in Spanish, isn't it? Tinta. But an inkling, however, is not. It's got nothing to do with ink. It's una noción, un pálpito, un corazonada. What else? A vague indication, it says. Indicio as well. To have an inkling, that is sospechar. Or presentir, sentir as well. As I said, the Middle English word meant a whisper or mention. And then it was a verb that meant to hint at. Then the Old English noun, inca, apparently meant suspicion. And an early meaning of inkling was a faint, perceptible sound, undertone, or a rumour. But now, of course, as I said, it refers to a tiny piece of information or knowledge that a person receives about something. So, as I said, como una noción, un pálpito, corazonada, un indicio as well, a vague indication. They barely gave us an inkling of what was going to happen. Apenas nos dieron un indicio de que lo que estaba pasando, apparently. That's one I've just read there. At the top of the list for the idiom of the day, and with the translation tener una corazonada, is Jack Ash, to have an inkling. And then, hot on his heels, we have Express, to have an inkling, have a vague intimation of, or have a slight knowledge of, an inkling. Okay, Belen was next, to have an inkling, tener un pálpito, or tener una corazonada. Then Javi López said, to have an inkling, to have... a hunch. It's a great synonym there. To have a hunch or to have a feeling that... whatever. Fantastic. Well done. Two very, very good synonyms there for to have an inkling. So to have a hunch or to have a feeling that. And then we have Juan Ramon who said, to have an inkling, tener una corazonada, have a vague intimation of or have a slight knowledge of. Next on the list we have Peter who said... to have an inkling, sospechar, tener una corazonada. And then Fran Javier, to have an inkling, tener un indicio, or una corazonada, una noción. Is it more or less like having a hunch? Absolutely. Yes, it is. Definitely. That was one that Javi gave us as well. A very great synonym, to have a hunch. Very, very similar to have an inkling. Similar. Very similar. And then, last but not least, to have an inkling, a vague idea, a sneaking suspicion. This is from Lata. Fantastic. A sneaking suspicion, which, of course, sospechar or presentir. Fantastic. Well done to everyone for getting to have an inkling. A good list of people there. Now, today's idiom of the day that we'll look at tomorrow, if you know this, then tweet me on I'm David Riddell. It is to have a hissy fit. What on earth does that mean? To have a hissy fit. We'll talk about that on tomorrow's show. Okay, let's just give you another hearing of the Twitter Responding Live Listening Challenge. As I said, the list is looking pretty good. Let's see if anybody else has had a go. Da-da-da-da. Concha. Concha Fidalgo has had a go, and so has Anna, long number. Not Anna Sobrino, but Anna 2468, 2468. Yeah, a long number. She's had a go as well. And who else? Mm-hmm. Okay, we've had, that's about it, I think. If I go down a little bit, we have Melena, we have Javi, we have Belen, we have Fran Javier Pavia. So good stuff. It is, again, so here is your next hearing. Shouldn't it be work? Good stuff. Okay, I just want to read a little bit of an article about somebody I'm a great fan of, although he died a few years ago now. It's a Canadian, a famous Canadian. Not Kyle Miller, although he is a famous Canadian, but this is a classical pianist by the name of Glenn Gould. Now, this is a very, very important person for many people, a very important person in my life, definitely. Glenn Gould was born in 1932, and he died in 1982. So he died just before the advent of social media, and even just before the internet became, you know, much more popular and much, much, much easier to get hold of. So Glenn Gould died just before that. However, he was obsessed with technology, the technology available to him at that time. He was obsessed with recording music. At first, he had a very successful career as a concert pianist, but at the age of 32, so he was still very, very young, he decided to stop giving concerts. Why did he decide to stop giving concerts? Well, because he just didn't like doing it. He suffered from nerves, he suffered from stage fright, and he also believed that concerts were a thing of the past. He believed that the future was in recorded music. And so he devoted the rest of his quite short life, you know, he died at the age of 50, just after his 50th birthday, in fact, he died of a stroke. He devoted the rest of his life to recording and making records. He also produced his own recordings, and he also edited his own recordings. So, and he would often actually write about his experiences of recording and editing his own music, because he thought that, unlike a concert experience where everything is, you know, off the cuff at the heat of the moment, when you have recording, you can perfect things. And so if you play a wrong note, then you just record it again and you splice it into the finished product. And so he was very, very evangelical about the future of recorded music. And it all began with the music of J.S. Bach. And in fact, he was 22 years old, Glenn Gould, when he recorded, at that time, a very little-known piece by Bach, and that is the Goldberg Variations. And so 22 years old, no one had ever really sort of played this piece on the piano, only a few people, let alone recorded it, and it became an overnight success. So this is back in the early 50s, so this is a long time ago. But it became a hit, and it sold a lot of recordings. And it kick-started popular interest in Bach. So few had actually heard Bach perform this way, as a living, almost modern force. And so just as important, Gould's... So this actually, 1955 was when he recorded it, the first recording of the Goldberg Variations. And it ignited a career that would make him one of classical music's last culture heroes. And so during his life, he revolutionized the way we hear 18th century music. And now more than, well, it's nearly 30 years after he was killed by a stroke in 1982 at just 50, he has one of the decade's best-selling piano records. And last autumn's, I think it was last year, they released a 3-CD set called A State of Wonder, which collects two versions of the Goldberg Variations with a disc of interviews and outtakes. This is an amazing figure, really. I mean, if you are interested in J.S. Bach or classical music, the good thing about Glenn Gould is that he is a figure that's not really part of the classical music world. He was never really part of the classical music industry. He was always an outsider. And he was a maverick, really. And he had a lot of fans as well. I mean, a lot of famous fans. There's one you might have heard of. It's the filmmaker John Waters. Now, he was a filmmaker who he came up with some very, very strange films. I think he was Canadian as well. He directed Hairspray, and the actress who played the wisecracking Flo on the sitcom Alice, even the young guitarist who tours with the Allman Brothers. And Waters says, I can put him on for hours. This is Glenn Gould. He's like nobody else. And Waters actually owns 10 books on Gould, hunts for anecdotes on him, and gives his CDs as gifts. He was the ultimate original, a real outsider. He had great style and hats and gloves and so on. That's the strange thing about Gould, is that he used to wear hats and gloves even in heat waves. So there is one famous documentary about Gould recording Bach just after this famous recording of the Goldberg Variations, who's still a young man, in New York. And it was a heat wave in New York, and you see Gould walking down the street with gloves and hat on because he was absolutely terrified of catching a cold. He was also a bit of a hypochondriac, as you can tell, and he also had a lot of strange phobias and fears. But a very, very interesting man, and one who really revolutionized classical music, I would say. We don't really have much time. I'm going to now just give you the answer to the listening challenge, the live listening challenge. The list is looking pretty good. If I go down, yeah, I said Concha has had another go. It looks like Maggie has also added her name to the list. So it is, if you remember, shouldn't you be at work? Shouldn't you be at work? Just having a little drink there. My throat's getting a bit dry. So what is the translation? Shouldn't you be at work? So it's like a negative question with the modal verb should. The negative shouldn't. And then the pronoun shouldn't you. Shouldn't you be at work? So no deberías estar en el trabajo. Shouldn't you be at work? But notice, I'm not saying shouldn't you be at the work. We don't need the article here. Although in Spanish you would say en el trabajo, we just say at work. Shouldn't you be at work? No deberías estar en el trabajo. So let's look at who got it right first of all. As I said, Express, I think, was the first person to write in. Did Express get it right? Shouldn't you been at work? I think that was a typo, but I'll give you the benefit of the doubt. So well done, Express. Then Sorina Stoyan, shouldn't you be at work? Perfect. Beatriz also got it right. Shouldn't you be at work? Then Javi Lopez, shouldn't you be at work? Jack, first of all, tweeted the translation, no deberías estar en el trabajo. And then the English version, shouldn't you be at work? Mr. Houses, shouldn't you be at work? Fran Javier, first of all, had a go. Are you sure you can work? Almost. Not quite, but almost. Melena, shouldn't she be at work, was her first attempt. Maria Angeles said, could you pick me up at work? And then we had Paula Dimulescu. Paula Dimulescu said, shouldn't you be at work? Perfect. Feno, shouldn't you be at work? Juan Antonio first thought, should she be at work? And then Juan Ramon Galvez, shouldn't you be at work? No deberías estar en el trabajo. Well done. Ana Sobrina was close. Shouldn't it work? Sorina Stoyan actually wrote in about the word stunt. Stunt means acrobacia. Perfecto. Then Kikokus, shouldn't you be at work? Perfect. Well done, Kikokus. And Belén González for the third or fourth hearing. Shouldn't you be at work? No deberías estar en el trabajo. Well done. And shouldn't you be at work? Edar Intriago also got it right. And so did Melena. The second time, I think that was. So well done. Shouldn't you be at work? Edita OJ also got it right. Fran Javier Pavia said, I guess today I really put my foot in it in a listening challenge. Okay, don't worry, don't worry. The important thing is taking part, of course. So Melena had another guess, but she got it wrong this time. So we'll go with your second guess. Shouldn't she be at work? No, shouldn't you be at work was what I said. Anna got it right. Shouldn't you be at work? Concha thought I said, shouldn't he be at work? And then I think that is it. Maggie, shouldn't you be at work? Perfect. Concha also said, shouldn't he be at work again? And then I think that's it. Well done to everyone for having a go at today's Twitter Responde live listening challenge. Shouldn't you be at work? No deberías estar en el trabajo. But when I say it quickly, it becomes, shouldn't you? Shouldn't you be at work? Shouldn't you be at work? Well done. Okay, it's time to give you the Twitter Responde podcast edition. This is one I'll give you now, and we'll give you the answer on tomorrow's show. It is, you could have called, and of course I'll give you the answer to the third and final app question in a couple of minutes. Remember, it is, ¿cómo se dice poner los cuernos a alguien in English? Is it to cheat on someone, to deceive on someone, to play on someone, or to fool on someone? I'll be back in 2 minutes.
Apúntate a los cursos intensivos de inglés de Vaughan. Descubre la eficacia de un método que te reta y te sorprende y con el que sí es posible mejorar tu inglés en poco tiempo. Eso sí, tendrás que esforzarte. Entra en grupovaughan.com. Do you Vaughan?
This summer, your kids want to go to the UK.
Pues claro que quieren. Y tú quieres que se vayan con total confianza y con todo bien atadito. Por eso Vaughan lanza su oferta de programas para jóvenes en Reino Unido para este verano. Volverán a casa con 1000 aventuras y te las contarán con acento British. Tenemos muchísimas opciones de alojamiento, en residencias, con una familia y hasta pueden alojarse con su propio profesor. Más información en el 91-133-5832 o en grupovaughan.com. Do you Vaughan?
Hello, I'm your Vaughan telephone class teacher. How are you doing?
¿Quieres que un profesor Vaughan llame a tus trabajadores? Con horarios flexibles y la posibilidad de cancelar o reservar cualquier sesión dentro de la misma semana. Elige el tema de conversación que tú quieras. Una conversación telefónica con un angloparlante con el ingrediente clave del método Vaughan para empresas. Consulta condiciones en el 91-133-5831. 91-133-5831.
Are you ready to start the class?
¿Estás pensando en apuntar a tus hijos a clases de inglés después del verano? En Club Junior aprenderán inglés con el método Vaughan, muy dinámico y divertido. Recibirán una formación de calidad y con profesores de todo el mundo. Clases por edades hasta los 10 años o por niveles hasta los 17 años. Llámanos sin compromiso al 91-133-5832 o entra en nuestra página web grupovaughan.com.
¿Sabes que puedes tener un profesor Vaughan en tu empresa? Con nuestro programa English in Company, creamos planes de formación a medida de cada alumno de cada grupo y nuestros profesores se desplazan a tu empresa en el horario que mejor se adapte a vuestras necesidades. English in Company, el método Vaughan en tu empresa. Infórmate sin compromiso en el 91-133-5831 o en grupovaughan.com.
The Sound of English.
Right, welcome back to the last little bit of The Sound of English with me, David Waddell. The third app question, ¿cómo se dice poner los cuernos a alguien in English? Is it A, to cheat on someone, B, to deceive on someone, C, to play on someone, or D, to fool on someone? And of course the answer was A, to cheat on someone. Poner los cuernos, of course, is wrong. You shouldn't do it, okay? Just don't do it. To cheat on someone in English, okay? To deceive on someone doesn't exist. To deceive someone without the preposition, that would be okay. To fool around with someone would be okay as well, I suppose. To play on someone, nah. To cheat on someone is the correct answer. So well done to all the people who got that right. Quite a few people this time. I don't know why, but lots of people seem to know that expression. Here we go. So let's have a look at this Mozart piece. Remember, Mozart, born in 1756. Years ago. Such a long time ago. But we still, well, I do anyway. I still listen to his music because it's gorgeous. He's a great, great composer. Why is his music so addictive? I don't know. It's quite simple sounding, but I would say it's deceptively simple. The adagio we've been looking at, the one that I've been playing, extremely simple. Now this is a little ornament. It's a decoration, so it's superfluous, really. If we just have the important notes, it'll be, that's fine. But this little decoration makes it that bit better, doesn't it? Okay, so up until that point, there has been nothing really outstanding or shocking about that piece at all. There's nothing in it that you think, oh my goodness, that's amazing. Until that point, I would argue, where instead of doing the same thing, Mozart gives us this very, very strange note. Now, that is what makes Mozart great. Just that little note there, just placed in the perfect, perfect position, makes it great, basically. So if I just play that again. Okay, so you have these three, well, I'd say two amazing parts. The first one. So at that moment of tension, it's only a second or so of time, but that time, that little tiny piece of tension makes this piece amazing. And then, of course, the third time we hear this main theme with this new harmony, this striking harmony. Then another unexpected note. So this is the biggest jump. The first jump is, and the second one is the strange jump from, and then the last time, the biggest jump. So in a split second, we go from this happy world of a major chord, to a minor chord. So it's a beautiful change. We only have a minute left. I'm sorry about this. So what I'll do is I'll just play from the beginning of this movement and say goodbye. Have a very nice evening / afternoon, and I'll see you at the same time tomorrow, 2:00. Take care.